Thank you, listeners, for joining me today for another excursion down Democracy Road here on the Bruce Birch radio program. Remember, it's your democracy, too, and it's not a spectator sport. I'll see you on Monday. This is Bruce Birch for the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. Thailand's Prime Minister canceled today's scheduled talk before the United Nations General Assembly in New York. That announcement comes hours after the country's military leaders informed the king that they're taking over the country. The Prime Minister has declared a state of emergency, but says his government is still in control. Meanwhile, tanks and troops are patrolling the streets of Bangkok. At the UN headquarters in New York this morning, President Bush addressed the assembly and called on world leaders to do more to spread democracy. Mr. Bush also said Iran must abandon its nuclear weapons ambitions. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is scheduled to speak at the assembly later today. Iranian Americans are protesting his presence outside the UN headquarters. The head of the U.S. Central Command says the U.S. military will maintain and possibly increase the 140,000 troops in Iraq through next spring. He said troop levels can't be lowered because of the rising sectarian violence and the Iraqi government's slow progress. In Iraq today, 18 people were killed and 11 wounded in two bombings in the northern city of Mosul. A car bomb went off, and as people gathered, a suicide bomber struck the crowd. In Baghdad today, the chief judge in Saddam Hussein's genocide trial was removed and replaced by his deputy. That follows a comment the chief judge made last week that Saddam was not a dictator. In Iraq, U.S. soldiers say Shiite militias are encouraging children as young as 6 or 7 to throw rocks and gasoline bombs to get them to shoot back. The soldiers say that's at the behest of Shiite militias, but a radical anti-American cleric denies his followers are behind the attacks. In Jerusalem, Israel's top military commander says the remaining troops in Lebanon will be withdrawn by this weekend. Security duties will be taken over by the Lebanese army and UN peacekeepers. In Washington, a new study shows that U.S. prisons are fertile ground for jailed Islamic extremists. It found that many prisons lack the resources to track extremist behavior and that radicalized Muslims take advantage of that to recruit terrorists. FBI statistics reveal that last year, of the nation's 10 largest cities, New York City was the safest. Dallas had the highest crime rate, followed by San Jose and Los Angeles. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news is next. It's now 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Federal health officials will have to wait at least 1 week for test results that will help them pinpoint how bacteria contaminated fresh spinach from a California company. An E. coli outbreak has killed one person and sickened more than 100 in 21 states. The Space Shuttle Atlantis return has been delayed from tomorrow to Thursday. That follows the discovery of at least one unknown object that may have flown out of its cargo bay. Former Vice President Al Gore has suggested combating global warming by taxing carbon dioxide emissions. The so-called carbon tax would take the place of all payroll taxes. The governors of Oregon, Washington, and California have joined together to help fight threats to the Pacific Ocean. They're calling for more federal funding to help combat pollution, one of the top threats to coastal waters. An AARP report says that the cost of brand name prescription drugs is rising faster than the rate of inflation. The Commerce Department reports that in August, U.S. home building starts fell 6%. Groundbreaking permits also dropped 2.3% that month. The National Retail Federation is predicting holiday sales will go up 5% this year. That's compared to last year's increase of 6.1%. Light sweet crude settled today at $61.66. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 14 points, NASDAQ down 13, S&P 500 down 3. You can hear more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Well, it's Tuesday. I'm Bob Kincaid. This, of course, is Head On. It's your daily confrontation with the facts. And here is fact number one. Our national embarrassment went to New York today and made for us a national shame. Now, we're going to get right busy, right quick, with the audio of Dear Leader's little speech. Dear Leader's embarrassing, tired, dull, worn out, same old speech. And, of course, it must be borne in mind, because, you know, I found this on Newsmax, and Newsmax certainly wouldn't print it if it wasn't true now, would they, the right-wing goobers? We got to start with a giggle. Headline from Newsmax, Bush approval rating up sharply. That's right, Bush approval rating up sharply. You can hear the delirious glee. President George W. Bush's approval rating has risen to 44%. Sort of like, well, yeah, what did W.C. Fields say? Sounds like a bubble in a bathtub. There are, you know, air squeaking out of a balloon. And instead of, yay, hooray, his approval rating's risen sharply. 44%. But here's the really fun part. Here's the fun part. While I'm reading directly from the text, okay. His highest risen to 44%, his highest rating in a year, while only 51% now say they disapprove of his job performance. That's right, only more than half of America hates his stinking guts. Yay! Oh, they've had cake and ice cream on Air Force One today, flying to New York. Only slightly more than half of America despises you, dear leader. According to a new USA Today Gallup poll, the rating has risen largely on the strength of increased support from Republicans. 86% said they approve of his performance, compared with 70% in May. They're back on the Kool-Aid. That and the decrease in the price of gas. The upswing in approval comes amid falling gas prices and a two-week drive by the president to highlight his administration's efforts to fight terrorism. Hey, we're fighting terrorism. Never mind the fact that we've gotten to the point where we've got to dig moats around Baghdad. Never mind the fact that our coalition partner, Pakistan, has recently surrendered to the Taliban. We're making great efforts to fight terrorism. That's right. That's right. We're gonna torture people and waterboard them. I had a great little piece of perspective sent to me earlier today. Dig it. Next time you're in a restaurant, or better yet, save this for a Republican. Next time, we're just dipping their head in the water to make him talk. Next time they pull that, they say, okay, well, next time that little sip of water at the restaurant goes down your throat the wrong way and you start choking for about 3.5 seconds and somebody comes and claps you on the back because it went down the wrong pipe, imagine that happening for about a minute. And tell me about how it's not torture unless it causes organ failure or death. Okay? Okay. So let's go. Now, we've got a guest coming on the program in about 20 minutes. We're going to be joined by Rand Beers. Rand Beers is part of the Valley Forge Initiative. He's also served as National Security Advisor to the Kerry Edwards campaign in 2004. And he's got about 35 years as a senior civil servant. He was a Marine officer. He was a rifle company commander in Vietnam. Entered the Foreign Service in 1971, civil service in 1983. He was on the National Security Council staff at the White House as Director for Counterterrorism and Counter-Narcotics from 1988 to 98. Director for Peacekeeping, Senior Director for Intelligence Programs. So he'll be helping us go over Dear Leader's little embarrassing remarks today. But I want us to, let's do it on our own. Let's start. We're going to stop and start as we go through this thing. First of all, let's play a game. We're going to start with the very beginning of Dear Leader's little speechifying. Everybody count. How many seconds does it take? How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop? Let's find out. How many seconds will it take before Dear Leader mentions 9/11? Okay, you ready? Hit it, Agnes.
Madam President, distinguished delegates, and ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for the privilege of speaking to this General Assembly. Last week, America and the world marked the fifth anniversary of the attacks that filled another September morning
Pause.
With death and suffering.
Pause. Pause. Okay, who had 11.3 seconds? Who had 11.3 seconds? Because if you had 11.3 seconds before he began to mention 9/11, you are a winner. Jesus. 11.3 seconds? Why didn't he just click his little Prussian heel click and 9/11? 9/11, y'all. Y'all scared? We're scared. Good. 9/11. 9/11. My God. So we roll on from here. Pick it up, Agnes.
On that terrible day, extremists killed nearly 3,000 innocent people, including citizens of dozens of nations represented right
now
here in
this chamber.
Now
they're extremists. They were terrorists.
Since then, the enemies of humanity have continued their campaign of murder. Al-Qaeda and those inspired by its extremist ideology have attacked more than 24 nations.
Uh-huh.
And recently, a different group of extremists deliberately provoked a terrible conflict.
Oh, wait, pause. A different group of extremists. I held so much gin on the cornflakes this morning. Go on.
In Lebanon. At the start of the 21st century, it is clear that the world is engaged in a great ideological struggle between extremists who use terror as a weapon to create fear and moderate people who work for peace. 5 years ago, I stood at this podium and called on the community of nations to defend civilization and build a more hopeful future. This is still the great challenge of our time. It is the calling of our generation. This morning, I want to speak about the more hopeful world that is within our reach.
No, wait, do it. The hopeful world. This dude's loaded. He is. He's whacked. Okay, Agnes says he's medicated.
The hopeful world is within our reach.
Jesus, he's turning into something from the old, what's her name, Tracy. Yeah, he's turning into a character from the Tracy Ullman show. Remember the cranky old lady who's used to be the Hollywood makeup artist? Oh, I don't really understand.
Ruby.
Yeah, Ruby. That's it, Ruby. Okay, hit it, Agnes.
World beyond terror. Where ordinary men and women are free to determine their own destiny. Where the voices of moderation are empowered. And where the extremists are marginalized by the peaceful majority. This world can be ours if we seek it, and if we work together.
Pause. This world can be ours if we seek it. I suppose there is an element of truth in that. The question is, whose? Who is ours? Halliburton? Bechtel? Northrop Grumman? GE? The Carlyle Group? The Bush family itself in all its criminal excess? This world can be ours, hidden Agnes.
Principles of this world beyond terror can be found in the very first sentence of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. This document declares that the equal and inalienable rights of all members of the human family is the foundation of freedom and justice and peace in the world. One of the authors of this document was a Lebanese diplomat named Charles Malik, who would go on to become president of this assembly. Mr. Malik insisted that these principles apply equally to all people of all regions, of all religions, including the men and women of the Arab world that was his home. In the nearly six decades since that document was approved, we have seen the forces of freedom and moderation transform entire continents. 60 years after a terrible war, Europe is now whole, free, and at peace. And Asia has seen freedom progress and hundreds of million people lifted out of desperate poverty. The words of the Universal Declaration are as true today as they were when they were written. As liberty flourishes, nations grow in tolerance and hope and peace. And we're seeing that bright future begin to take
prattle,
root
prattle,
in the
prattle, prattle. Use the fast forward button, Agnes. Yep, same content. Not much different. All right, stop.
Some of the changes in the Middle East are happening gradually. But they are real.
Pause. Yeah, that's true. The changes are happening gradually, but they are real, because gradually the Middle East is going to devolve into utter chaos and just a fundamentalist nightmare. Fundamentalist nightmare in Iraq. Fundamentalist nightmare in Saudi Arabia. Fundamentalist nightmare in Egypt. Fundamentalist nightmare everywhere you look. And it's not happening as fast as it might happen, but it's happening certainly fast enough, isn't it? And now there's all this talk about, will George Bush meet Mahmoud Ahmadinejad? Will they shake hands? Will they talk? Let's go to the phones. We're joined by Philip. Hey, Philip, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hi there, Bob.
How are you?
Well, nauseated from the, I guess we'll call it a speech. Funny when Agnes was fast forwarding there. It kind of sounded like Condoleezza Rice a little bit.
Yeah, I thought I heard my husband or the president in there somewhere, didn't you?
My husband, the president. Yeah, not only did George have something to say today, Cheney was out saying some stuff, too.
Yeah, he addressed the Association of Car Dealers or something.
Yeah, he was out there and he said the war on terror is a test of our strength, a test of our capabilities, and above all, a test of our character. We know that the hopes of the civilized world ride with us. Our cause is right, and it's a just cause, and our nation will prevail. What sick bastards these people are.
Aren't they just disgusting?
Well, it's nauseating. First of all, for them to stand up there in front of the United Nations and talk about people that have terrorized the world And to talk about Iran trying to protect itself, first of all, that nauseates me to begin with, because this administration, and we're responsible in America, too, by the way.
Yes.
People that have not protested like the people in Mexico are doing now against their problem with their elections. We have let this administration go ahead and torture people. We've let them build secret prisons. We've invaded a country. We've killed hundreds of thousands. We've got the administration now, the House, fixing to cut funding on brain injury, the number one injury of troops coming home.
Exactly.
We've done it, and it's really disgusting. So this little weasel stands up in front of the United Nations with his prepared speech, and he does sound kind of drugged or drunk today, doesn't he?
Well, you know, that's the thing. He had all day yesterday. He had the plane flight up to New York. Plenty of time to rehearse it, but there is something in his bloodstream, Philip.
Something, or in his ear. Maybe Uncle Carl is there saying, don't get mad, George. It won't look good. Don't get
well,
mad.
That's, right. You know, there's an element of truth in that, Philip, because if you get your own voice coming back at you, and you're, I mean, it's an effect that we've had to deal with from time to time here, it will make you feel disoriented so that you'll wind up sort of repeating yourself and sounding, and, you know, maybe they had the gain up in the earpiece. I don't know, but that sounds,
maybe,
you know.
Maybe God was talking to him. You know, God talks with George as well.
That sounds, but yeah, but to me, Philip, that sounds like that buttload of Xanax.
Yeah, a little bit. That's George. Or trying to try that southern accent a little bit too heavily. You know, when he's talking about terror and 9/11, he kind of gets heavier on his accent.
You're right.
Well, the point today is, you know, we're talking about Iran. We're talking on your message board, as a matter of fact. People want to pop over there off of your website. There's an interesting piece up on there today that somebody logged up about the administration actually making plans to go ahead and bomb Iran. And it's going to be another one of these administration changes, one of these regime changes.
Yeah, regime change.
Saddam.
Yeah. And, you know, today, speaking, well, is it the Time Magazine article?
It's from the, I'm sorry, I don't have it called up on my computer.
Yeah, I think it might be, because I saw a chunk of that, talking about how the Navy was sent, ready to deploy orders and so forth, and that, you know, and the article lays out in pretty good fashion just exactly what we can expect to have happen.
Well, today on my blog, I'm Philip Rockwell, by the way, writing on Towers and Morris, and today
yes.
I talked about this whole thing with this possible October surprise thing, and we're going to see one of two scenarios. I think we're going to either see an attack here, or we're going to see something presented to us in the form of going after Iraq, because one of the things he said that was very telling is, you know, time is of the essence, and he's been using the word consequence a lot, too, in these speeches. Did you notice that?
Yeah, the consequence being his definition of hitting somebody with a stick.
You do what we say, but not as we do. And I think that's the biggest problem I have with this administration. We have the gall as Americans, and even people to this day are still swallowing this stuff. We have the gall to sit around and say, well, yeah, Iran is crazy. We don't want them to have nuclear weapons and protect themselves. And we're the United States, and since we're the United States, we are just so good and so wonderful, you know, we can tell everybody else what to do, except we don't do it ourselves.
Right. Well, we're not the dangerous ones.
Of course not. You know, we haven't tortured anybody. We haven't set up secret prisons. We don't have a story out today, you know, about a Canadian citizen that was sent to Syria and tortured for at least a good year, and come to find out he was not even a terror threat at all.
Well, he wasn't even a suspect. It was a classic case of mistaken identity, if I'm not mistaken. They didn't even want the guy, but, you know, just for good measure, let's send him to Syria and let the Syrians torture him for a while. Isn't it lovely how we can hate the Syrians, but we can love them while they're doing our dirty torture business for us?
Oh, sure. Well, it's the same thing with Pakistan. Look at what Pakistan's doing. Pakistan is making friends with the Taliban there, and supposedly that's where Bin Laden, of course, the guy that George doesn't think about very much, is hiding out at, you know. We love him. As a matter of fact, Bush is going to meet with him later on in the week, I believe.
Oh, Pervez Musharraf?
Yes.
Or Bin Laden. I mean, for all we know, Bin Laden may be there, too. I mean,
well, maybe they might have coffee, tea.
Of course, I personally think that Bin Laden's in the basement at Crawford playing snooker.
Oh, probably. He gets the heroin for George.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, heroin production is up some depending on the numbers, somewhere between 20 and 80% this year, thanks to Bush administration policies. Mothers and fathers across the nation will lose their children to a hot dose somewhere along the way, and they'll cry out in, horror for the war on drugs.
Well, that's why people in Afghanistan are happy they're stoned. But one of the things I pointed out in my article today was that you look at Spain, go back to March 2004, and look at what happened in Spain. Spain didn't go out and invade a nation that didn't attack them. They didn't rape their treasury. They didn't set up secret torture prisons to create this war on terror. They didn't imprison people. They've done nothing like the Bush administration has done.
No, they
haven't been attacked in the whole.
They had proof that some of the bombers were Moroccans, and it would have been nothing to send the Spanish Air Force and Navy right across the Straits of Gibraltar and bomb the snot out of Morocco and come back. They didn't do that. They just went quietly about the business of engaging in law enforcement activity, which is the necessary and rational outcome of a crime like what happened to them. They found the bad guys and they started trying them and putting them in prison.
And that's the way you do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it the way we're doing it. People wonder why we've got to be afraid, and terrorist threat, you know, code yellow, code blue.
Spinach.
Red, because we're instigating people. When you point the finger at people, when you yell at people, when you call them names, when you sit on national TV during 9/11, a five-year anniversary of that, and talk about Islamo-fascist terrorists that like to kill women and children, and then the people are looking at you in the face on the TV or overseas and thinking, well, wait a minute. You've killed tens of thousands of people in Iraq. You invaded a country. You've used napalm-like weapons. You've melted children in their basements in Fallujah, and you're talking about Islamo-fascists that kill women and children? We instigate the terror threats against us. So in some respects, I think if we get something, you know, we're going to get what we deserve because we've allowed this man to run his mouth.
Well, you know, there's something coming, and I've been hammering now for the last 2-3 weeks. It's going to get nastier. It's going to get nastier. It's going to get nastier.
Unfortunately, it is, and I think, you know, the only way a lot of people are going to wake up is if we have something nasty. It's a shame you have to say that. You know, it took that back in the 1970s and 60s. They had, on the college campuses, they had to have the Kent State incidents where actual students were being shot by the National Guard. To really wake up people and get them out there. But it's going to come down to this, I think. It's going to come down to the people, the actual people in this nation, to take back this country as peacefully and legally as we can.
Absolutely. And, you know, what scares me is the fact that, you know, early on in the war on Iraq, the war against the people of Iraq, Philip, everybody said, well, not everybody, but there was a majority who said, you know, George Bush is doing a fine job in the war on terror. So if they know by past practice that if they start the war against Iran, that initially the American opinion and the American pulse will be that George Bush is doing a good job handling the war against Iran. It's only after he gets far enough into it to realize that he had no business in it in the first place, and people start, you know, finding out what horrors have gone on, that the American popular opinion turns, Philip. And that's what's scary, because he knows that between, oh, say, mid-October and November the 7th, he can count on the American popular opinion to say, George Bush is handling the war in Iran just fine.
And that's really a shame, and there's really no excuse for it, because there's enough of us that are out here that call ourselves progressives or liberals or Democrats that could get out and do, like I mentioned earlier, the people in Mexico out protesting over the weekend, millions strong in Mexico City. We didn't see nothing like that after 2004. We still don't see that.
No.
In San Diego, we see pre-planned package protests where the same 200, 300 people come out of a city of a million people with their placards and their signs and, you know, bring the troops home. And that's good. Mind you, that's good that people come out, but where are the rest of the people that
right.
are
well, it's
on
because
radio
the rest,
and other networks?
Yeah. Well, it's because the rest of the people are not feeling the brunt of the war. Nobody's sons and daughters are being called up involuntarily. And until, you know, and frankly, until people start feeling it, you know, we were beginning to get a little testy with the 3.25 gasoline. But look it, we're getting near an election, and it's dropping, just like it dropped before the 2004 election, just like it dropped before the 2002 election, and just like it dropped before the 2000, because it didn't happen in 2000. But, yeah, we're being manipulated.
Well, we're always going to be manipulated by any administration during any election time, but particularly this time, people got to pay attention. because this regime, okay, and I call it a regime, it's not an administration, really. It's not like anything we've ever dealt with in United States history. This is a fascist regime.
Yeah.
These people crave power. There is no way, no way that they're going to let Democrats take over the Congress without a good fight, or at least doing something to prevent that from happening, because they know the consequences they're going to face. Inquiries, subpoena power, possible impeachment, possible criminal charges. They're not going to let this happen. At least that's my feeling about it.
Well, you know, I think you've got it. You've got it spot on. Philip, I've got a roll. We've got an interview coming up, and I've only got a couple of minutes with the gentleman. So I thank you very kindly for your call, and I hope we'll hear from you again very soon.
Sure will. And let me give a plug to Agnes, too. If anybody's never talked to Agnes, thumbs up for her, too.
She's pretty amazing, isn't
she? Yes,
she is. All right. Thank you, Philip. Take care.
Take care, Bob.
Bye now. And we're joined on the phone now by Rand Beers, as I described him to you earlier. He is the president of the Valley Forge Initiative and has more national security experience than most human beings can even imagine. Mr. Beers, are you with us?
I am.
Thank you very kindly for joining us, sir, on relatively short notice. Let me just ask the question as plainly as I can. What did you think of George Bush's little speech at the UN today?
Well, you know, it was a mixed bag in the simplest terms. There were some parts that were good, and there were some parts that sort of didn't quite accord with reality or were a little tone-deaf in terms of the way that you talk to peoples and countries around the world. By that, I mean the normal rhetoric that the president associates with democracy, which as words are actually quite good, came through again in this speech. The problem, of course, is that they don't necessarily accord with reality, and they don't really show a path on how to get to where the president wants to go. So the words sound fine, but they don't seem to give us a clear direction on how to accomplish them as goals.
What was
it? Started off. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, Mr. Beers, was it really, and this is subjective, of course, I understand, but was it really necessary for him to make his first mention of 9/11 11.2 seconds into the speech? I mean, isn't that a little bit ham-fisted?
Yes, it is, and I think it was a clear political objective. And if you read the speech, it's directed actually more at the American people and the American political process than it was a speech that ought to have been delivered in the UN. And that's where I said it was a little tone deaf. On the one hand, there were wonderful appeals to the peoples of Iran and Syria and Darfur, talking about how their governments are giving them a difficult time and making their progress toward democracy difficult. The difficulty with that is that we still have to deal with the governments of Iran, Syria, and Sudan in terms of accomplishing some goals. So if he was trying to ensure that our path to working with those governments was more difficult, he was successful, even while trying to appeal to the people of those countries, who, quite frankly, are not about to rise up and overthrow their government. So if this was a speech about regime change, I don't think it's going to accomplish that.
Well, you know, one of the things he did, Mr. Beers, is he started out and said there's been dramatic results, and we see them here in this chamber. 5 years ago, Afghanistan was ruled by a brutal Taliban regime. Now, I understand that the media in this country is not doing a terribly good job at letting America know just exactly what's going badly wrong in Afghanistan. But does he did he really expect the rest of the world to think that or to not know about the rise and resurgence of the Taliban, the fact that Pakistan surrendered to the Taliban last week? I mean, is this just his playing purely and simply on the ignorance of the American people?
He was appealing to the American people with his vision of the way the world is today. And I think and believe that the American people are smarter than the president gives them credit for. They certainly understand that the situation in Iraq, as he described it, is not the situation that actually prevails in Iraq today. And I think, and I wish there was more reporting, and I agree with you that there should be more reporting about how bad Afghanistan, in fact, really is. I that was one of the main reasons that I left the Bush administration, because I felt that the administration in turning to Iraq was walking away from the success that we had in Afghanistan, not devoting the resources, the time, the attention, the people that needed to ensure that the military victory that we won in Afghanistan was in fact preserved. It's in many ways just a longer and more drawn out, and I'm sure to the people of Pakistan, an equally painful process to what happened in Iraq, where we didn't have enough troops and we didn't have enough support to give them a chance to actually go on from the Saddam Hussein dictatorship in any kind of a reasonable way, and to find that immediately they were swamped in violence. It took a longer period of time to manifest in Afghanistan, but you're absolutely right. And in particular, you're right about the deal that Musharraf cut with the Taliban, which is, unless he's prepared upon the demonstration of the failure of the Taliban to abide by the agreement, to go back in there, a total capitulation.
Well, I heard words in the speech, Mr. Beers, about things like that the argument against the war in Iraq rests on a false premise that the Middle East was stable to begin with. Now, I'm certainly not going to sit here and be an apologist for Saddam Hussein, but the fact of the matter remains that women could actively take part in civil society in Iraq prior to the invasion thereof. The fact remains that there was a Christian contingent in Iraq that was allowed to worship freely. And we hear so much about the White House's regard for Christianity, and yet again, I point to a failure of the media, and I think it's a bit duplicitous of the Bush administration to talk about the fact that, well, you know, Iraq is a mess because it was a mess that was waiting to happen. That simply isn't true, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, what we had in Iraq was a brutal dictatorship on the one hand, and some ability of the people in Iraq to survive in some sort of a stable environment. When we came in and took out the elements of stability along with the brutal dictatorship, we basically took a society that had learned how to survive and threw it into a cauldron of chaos that ended up with individuals in Iraqi society wondering how could things be worse than Saddam in terms of security on the daily life, unless you were an opponent of the government, in which you could expect to have your head chopped off. An active opponent of the government, and crime is rampant, and the militias are out and kill indiscriminately. In many ways, as bad as the secret police that Saddam ran, but it appears, except for the extreme cases of genocide, that the number of dead is in fact sadly greater today in Iraq than it was under Saddam, and I am glad that he is gone. But we botched this. That how can we claim that this is a success?
Well, and that's a question we ask almost every night, Mr. Beers. And in the future, how can we pretend that we are surprised when, in fact, as Mr. Bush says, Iraq becomes an ally in the war on terror. The only problem is they're going to wind up an ally of someone besides us. You know, for a man who has plucked his 3-year-old out of the rubble from a Tomahawk cruise missile attack or something like that, how can we possibly be surprised when 20 years down the road her cousin or her nephew or something like that, decides he'd like to kill a few Americans for the sake of revenge? It seemed such a misguided speech. And frankly, I'd like your thoughts, Mr. Beers. I remember in 2003, in January, in the State of the Union address, when Mr. Bush delivered an impassioned message, to the people of Iraq, we love you, we respect you, all of those things, that smarmy goodness. And then, 2 months later, We had begun something that, has, according to some estimates, has killed between 60 and 150,000 unarmed civilians. We've got the same kind of language in today's speech to the people of Iran. The United States respects you. Should we expect, is it reasonable to expect an October surprise in the form of some sort of attack on Iran?
All I can say is I hope that it's not. this president has shown absolutely callous disregard for what makes policy sense and for what's good for America in the kinds of decisions that he has made. We had on the days and weeks after 9/11 the support of the entire world. Imagine the French saying, "We are Americans too." We have thrown that opportunity to change the world away by this president's absolute disregard for finding ways to bring people together, to involve other nations in ways other than marching in lockstep after the United States, regardless of what our direction or guidance might be. We have to get back to the kind of a world that we had before George Bush was president, where people are willing to work together, where countries understand that we don't agree about everything, but we can find ways to work together to deal with common interests, to deal with common threats. And it doesn't mean that one country orders everybody else to follow, but that they find common paths to go down together.
Well, you say, and I know we've only got a couple of minutes left, Mr. Beers, and I do thank you so much for your time. You say that we lost that opportunity. I suppose the key question then becomes one of, has that opportunity been lost for good? Is it possible for the United States to reclaim some semblance of its decency, if you will? And if that is possible, how can it happen? And how long will it? How long do you think it will take to recover?
Well, I think that the first thing that has to happen either is that the president, like the leopard, has to totally change his spots.
What's the likelihood of that happening?
That's not very likely, which means that we have to get on beyond the 2008 election to the inauguration of the next president of the United States, who hopefully understands that these problems have to be dealt with immediately. If John Kerry had been elected president in 2004, we would have had, even in the transition period, a series of phone calls, a series of meetings that would have set the stage for changing the nature of our relationship with other countries, where we would have listened to their concerns and we would have taken them into account and we would have talked about our own concerns and we would have found a way to move forward together. We would have found a way for countries to work with us to deal with the threats around the world today instead of wondering what it is we were trying to do and worried about being associated with us because the president is supporting activities that other people think amount to torture, and not sanctioning the people who did them, not sanctioning the people who speak about Islam in ways that sound like we are trying to do nothing more than have them conform to our way of life rather than learning to live together with others.
Well, when you say that we have to wait until 2008, Mr. Beers, I have to tell you that that terrifies me. I'm not scared of the terrorists. There's a lot of things out there, and we've discussed it on this program, a lot of things out there that can hurt us or harm us much more likely than any bearded terrorist 8,000 miles away. But
well, we can certainly elect Democratic majority in one or both of the houses of Congress to hold the president accountable, to ask the questions, to hold the hearing that expose these kinds of activities and make the president's ability to operate as an unchecked executive in a way that hasn't happened with a rubber-stamp Republican Congress. But ultimately, we have to change the president because the executive still does have power.
Well, you're absolutely right. Thank you so very kindly, Mr. Beers. I know you're on a tight schedule, so I appreciate the thought that you're giving to these issues out there, and I hope at some point in the future perhaps we can have a lengthier conversation on overall foreign policy.
I'd love to do that.
And we'll bother you at another evening.
Okay.
Thank you.
Glad to help, and good luck.
Thank you. Our pleasure, and so many thanks. Bye now.
Bye.
Rand Beers, president of the Valley Forge Initiative. This is, you'll note, this gentleman worked for George W. Bush. He was also national security advisor to the Kerry Edwards campaign in 2004. I spoke to him prior to the November election. There are brilliant people engaged in foreign policy analysis. Unfortunately, what we have operating out of the White House right now is something more closely akin to that of the Mad Hatter's Tea Party. And it should be cause for fear. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
Well, I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
In Kosovo, the U.S. government has provided over $292 million, a $70 million U.S. government assistance package for Central America in response to Hurricane Mitch.
Sometimes it seems like we spend an awful lot of our tax money helping people in other countries. But in reality, it's less than 1% of our government's annual budget. Our aid programs save lives by helping couples plan their families, immunizing children against deadly diseases, and ensuring that people have safe drinking water. It's important that these programs continue. Helping create a healthy and secure future for people in developing countries helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. senators and representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121. This message brought to you by Population Action International.
Before the hour, I want to go back to Dear Leader's audio. If you didn't hear it already, you certainly deserve to be at least nauseated this evening. I kid. But a couple of announcements. Most primarily, when the show is over, or perhaps even during the top of the hour news. What the heck? Last night you went to YouTube and you looked at Jesus Camp. Well, we're going to have a little more fun with YouTube during the program, and I'd like your thoughts. I want you to go, if you don't mind, at your leisure, go to YouTube and, in the search field, type in the words KTM. KTM. And a video will load about Sybil Edmonds, the whistleblower who has been, desperately, at every turn, the federal government has been there trying to shut her up because she has told verifiable horror stories about what has gone on inside the FBI and the intelligence community of the United States. And there's a clip there. Do America a favor. And after you've watched the clip, give it a 5-star rating and help the thing grow so that other people will see it. There's also a link to this over at headonradionetwork.com. I've been reading about Sybil Edmonds for literally years. And she has, and this is not tinfoil hat black helicopter stuff, okay? This is the real deal. She is a whistleblower who has been deliberately shut down by forces that do not want her to speak her truth. This is an opportunity to try to get that truth out. So please, go watch it, rate it with 5 stars, add it to your favorites, make a comment, tell your friends and neighbors to watch this thing. Because it's like a, I don't know, it's like a Harrison Ford thriller with a beautiful dark-haired, dark-eyed government whistleblower in the Harrison Ford role. Sybil Edmonds, go and have a look. Now let's dive into the speech, back into Dear Leader's speech. Agnes, unpause that sucker, would you?
Algeria has held its first competitive presidential election.
That's more than we can say for ourselves. Neutral.
The United Arab Emirates recently announced that half of its seats in the Federal National Council will be chosen by elections.
Now, wait, pause that. Did you get that? The United Arab Emirates, these are the guys that he wanted to sell our ports to. Why, they've just decided that half of their National Assembly will actually be elected. Oh, joy! The other half, of course, will still be selected by the tyrant or tyrants of the United Arab Emirates. But, you know, and I'm not using tyrant in some sort of pejorative term. You need to understand. This is tyrant within, tyrannis, the Greek word, strongman. Some are good, some are bad. You know, that's the problem with a tyrant. It's the luck of the draw. You know, you might get a brilliant Solon, or on the next run through, you might get a guy who's crazier than a sprayed roach. But yeah, half of their National Assembly is going to be elected. Half of it. Now, you see, if Saddam had said that, half of the National Assembly is going to be elected, then, you know, we would have bombed him. Oh, wait a minute, we did.
Yeah.
Kuwait, we liberated Kuwait. Oh, he's going to mention Kuwait in a minute. Hit it.
Kuwait held elections in which women were allowed to vote and run for office for the first time.
Damn!
Citizens have voted in municipal elections in Saudi Arabia.
Wait, they're letting the women's vote? They're letting the women's vote? Oh, joy! Freedom has come to Kuwait! Not quite. And they're actually electing mayors in Saudi Arabia. Woohoo! Now, mind you, they are crazier than a run-over dog Wahhabi mayors. Wait a minute, I see an ankle. Have her whipped. See? What are you doing out and about in that purple burqa? Burqas are to be black. Call out the Committee on Prevention of Vice and Promotion of Virtue and to whip that woman in the purple burqa. See, you know, I just want to leave people alone. I don't want anything to do with their culture. It has some redeeming merits, but right now the Arabian Peninsula is in the grips of the Wahhabists, and if you want to go and read T.E. Lawrence's book, you'll find out that he had his own dealings with them. They're religiously insane, just like Pat Robertson, just like Donald Wildman, just like Fred Phelps, just like James Dobson. They're religiously nuts! A toenail! Harlot! Why would a civilized nation, except for the fact that they got a buttload of oil, why would a civilized nation want anything to do with those people? Because in many instances, you see, all that burqa business and harlot toenail crap is cultural, not religious. So don't anybody think that I'm getting on the religion. I'll get on the religion separately, okay? But, you know, people are from, I believe, the First Amendment. Oh, boy, you know, you entertain whatever superstition you wish to entertain. If you want to be a member of Roman Catholic superstition, do that. You want to be a member of Muslim superstition, do that. You want to be a member of Anglican superstition, do that. If you want to believe that you eat a cracker and it turns to Jesus meat in your belly, do that. But do not suppose that you have the right to foist that foolishness off on rational thinking people. So they're having mayoral elections in Saudi Arabia. Oh, be joyful! So what? If they are, that's their business, that is their choice. And George Bush didn't have a damn thing to do with it. And he stands up there on his podium like, well, you know, I personally oversaw the mayoral elections in Wadi al-Nahuti in the middle of the desert. No. No. So there's a whole bunch more of this stuff, including the passage in the speech that I mentioned to Mr. Beers that I find particularly terrifying, and that is his message of special love and affection to the people of Iran. Oh, Lordy. Because when he starts passing out the special love, people start dying. I do not have it, but it is available somewhere. Go back. Do this for yourself. You don't need me to play it for you. Go and listen to the 2003 the State of the Union address. Go and listen to him declare his undying affection for the people of Iraq and telling them how they deserve to be free and how he loves them and the people of America, blah, 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 blah. And, of course, it wasn't a month and a half before he started slaughtering innocent civilians there. With his Tomahawk cruise missiles and his smart bombs dropped by pilots operating aircraft at 40,000 feet. Look, there it goes. There goes the spot. And look on my camera. The spot just went poof. And never had to see the 3-year-old girl who was part of the poof. You know, it's kind of sad, isn't it? Done in your name. So all of that is coming up in the next hour. And we're going to take a quick break for the news. When we come back, we'll get back into the audio. Why not? And I got to say, oh, by the way, it's not all Bush all the time. I got a couple other stories here that'll make your toenails curl. Because I guess that's kind of what we do, isn't it? It's what we do here at the Head On Radio Network. It's what I do. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Quality News Network. Thailand's Prime Minister was scheduled to talk today before the United Nations General Assembly in New York, but he canceled after receiving the news of a military coup. In Bangkok, the army commander has declared martial law, suspended the constitution, and sworn loyalty to the king. The prime minister has declared a state of emergency as troops and tanks continue patrolling the streets of the capital. In New York, President Bush addressed the assembly this morning and called on world leaders to do more to spread democracy. He also stated that the U.S. is not waging a war against Islam, as some Muslims have charged. In addition, Mr. Bush threatened consequences for Iran if it does not return to negotiations over its nuclear program. Outside the U.N. headquarters, thousands of protesters championed various causes, including ending the war in Iraq. One man said the U.S. government orchestrated the September 11th attacks to regain military might. In Iraq today, 18 people were killed and 11 wounded in two bombings. Dozens more tortured bodies were discovered throughout Baghdad. In addition, the U.S. military has confirmed that three more GIs died Sunday in Baghdad, one from a car bomb, one from gunfire, and one from non-combat injuries. In Iraq, a top military leader says there's no plan to bring any of the 140,000 troops home anytime soon. He says even more troops may be deployed through next spring in response to rising sectarian violence. In Jerusalem, Israel's top military commander says the remaining troops in Lebanon will be withdrawn by this weekend. Security duties will be taken over by the Lebanese army and UN peacekeepers. That was one of the key requirements in the ceasefire that ended fighting between Israel and Hezbollah. Muslims in Turkey, Iraq, and the Palestinian territories say the Pope's apology on Sunday regarding his remarks linking Islam and violence is not good enough. They say they want a clearer statement. Seven churches in the West Bank and Gaza have been attacked since his comments last week. FBI statistics reveal that last year, of the nation's 10 largest cities, New York City was the safest. Dallas had the highest crime rate, followed by San Jose and Los Angeles. The Southern California wildfire that's been burning out of control since Labor Day is now threatening several communities near the Los Padres National Forest. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
South African officials have resorted to building fiberglass igloos to house endangered penguins. stuff because commercial businesses are taking the material the penguins use to build their nests and selling it as fertilizer. Federal health officials are waiting on test results that will help them figure out the cause of an E. coli outbreak stemming from a California company's fresh spinach. One person has died, more than 100 others sickened. The Labor Department reports that wholesale prices rose 0.1% last month. Economists see this as an indication that inflation pressures are easing. The National Retail Federation is predicting holiday sales will go up 5% this year. That's compared to last year's increase of 6.1%. The Chrysler Group is reducing dealer deliveries in the third quarter by 90,000. That follows a disappointing summer that saw fewer sales of trucks and SUVs. GM expects to begin leasing hydrogen fuel cell-powered SUVs late next year. The vehicles will be introduced in Europe, Asia, and the U.S. Yahoo's stock fell 12% today on news that its third-quarter results will be hurt by an apparent slowdown in auto and financial advertising. Light sweet crude settled near a six-month low today at $61.66. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 14 points, NASDAQ down 13, S&P 500 down 3. You can hear more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
What do you...
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
I feel compelled to make something clear. And I thought I did. Everybody is free to believe as they will. I have no intention of trying to tell anybody what to believe about the invisible world. All I know is what I can observe with my own eyes and, you know, see, hear, touch, smell, taste, that kind of thing. And learn from the seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, and tasting of others. It is called the passage of the passing down of wisdom and knowledge. But I know that making humanity decide on a roll of the dice or the accident of birth, whether or not, you know, I was born Hindu, I was born Christian. Well, too bad for one of y'all, because one of you is going to hell and the other one's going to heaven. It's a pretty crappy way to run a universe, and it's a pretty crappy God that would do something like that. That's my only point. You know? Agnes, let's go back to Dear Leader's little speechifying. Hairball. Yeah, I know. Let's crank it up again. Here we go.
In parliamentary elections in Jordan and Bahrain, and in multi-party presidential elections in Yemen and Egypt. These are important steps, and the government should continue to move forward with other reforms that show they trust their people. Every nation that travels the road to freedom moves at a different pace, and the democracies they build will reflect their own culture and traditions. But the destination is the same. A free society where people live at peace with each other and at peace with the world. Some have argued that the democratic changes we're seeing in the Middle East are destabilizing the region. This argument rests on a false assumption that the Middle East was stable to begin with. The reality is that the stability we thought we saw in the Middle East was a mirage. For decades, millions of men and women in the region have been trapped in oppression and hopelessness.
Wait a minute.
These conditions left a generation disillusioned.
Did Dear Leader have his cell phone on? Did you hear that? Diddling, ding, diddling, ding, diddling, ding, ding. That wasn't us.
Maybe it was one of the Secret Service.
No, well, I'm beginning to wonder. I mean, maybe that's some sort of a cell phone connection going into his ear. What a bunch of crap.
You're abusing me, Bob.
What a bunch of unmitigated hooey. Did you catch that? What we thought was stability in the Middle East was only a mirage. The reality is that the stability we thought we saw in the Middle East was a mirage. No, there was no mirage to it. The stability that you have in Saudi Arabia is there because there is a brutal monarchy. You know, 21st century monarchies. Nah, I don't think so. There's a brutal monarchy in Saudi Arabia that keeps its people in line through brutal practices. There is a brutal fundamentalist religious regime in Iran that keeps its people in line through brutal practices. There was a brutal dictatorship, okay, in Iraq, and that dictator kept his people in line through brutality. You know, frankly, Saddam Hussein had probably the hardest job of any of those because, in the main, he had Sunnis, Shia, and Kurds. He had the same kind of problem that Marshal Tito had in Yugoslavia. Serbs, Croats, Bosnians, Herzegovinans, Kosovars, Albanians, Macedonians. And he just said, look, you know, we're going to live in peace or I'm going to kill every last one of you. Which, in large part, is the way that dictators operate. Syria is a brutal dictatorship that was stable because of the brutal policies of its government toward its people. Egypt? You don't want to go to no Egyptian jail. Yemen? The UAE? Qatar? There's no... Kuwait? There's no representative government of the people, by the people, and for the people over there. And you can't make there be. You can even make the argument that there is a certain amount of dictatorial or tyrannical taste in the government of Israel. Especially when you consider how they consider how they treat their helots, namely the Palestinians. The entire Middle East, to that extent, maybe dear leader's right. There is a mirage of stability. But the thing is, that stability had an element of reality to it that we were more than happy to participate in. Now, he won't attack the Saudi Arabians, 15 of whom were on the jetliners that attacked us on September the 11th. He won't attack the Yemenis, who also were on those planes. He won't attack the Egyptians who were on those planes. Not at all. Not at all. Only a country that had no ability to fight back and had monstrous amounts of resources that... it's not about bringing down gas prices here. No, sunshine. It's about driving them up, and it's about controlling the resources when it comes time to go and sell them to China and India and the developing industrialized Indian Ocean Basin and Pacific Rim. That's what it's about. So when I hear things like... 5 years ago, Iraq's seat in this body was held by a dictator who killed his citizens, invaded his neighbors, and showed his contempt for the world by defying more than a dozen UN Security Council resolutions. I can't take it seriously because how many UN Security Council resolutions has Israel thumbed its nose at? Huh? For decades, millions of men and women in the region have been trapped in oppression and hopelessness, and they're still trapped there, George. They're trapped in Saudi Arabia. They're trapped in that country whose leaders you kiss and hold hands with. They're trapped, George. And you don't give a tinker's damn about them as long as the oil flows and your portfolio grows. Yeah. So we'll come back to this. We'll take a quick break. We're gonna get to the good parts, don't worry. Well, there are no good parts. But not too far from here, we're going to have, George is going to set up a straw man, and I want you to hear this, because I called this speech a national shame and a national embarrassment. Oh, Lord, I don't just make things up. It really, really is. Now, you know the phone number, 877-443-2366. Email comes into bob@headonradio.com. Learn it, know it, use it. This is the Head On Radio Network, and I am Bob Kincaid.
Whatever gets you through the night.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to irs.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. 4484.
Check. Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artists Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
Music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. It's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution. Music makes a difference. Give it a spin at wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Young people from all over the globe are joining up to fight for the future.
I'm doing my part.
I'm doing my part.
I'm doing my part.
I'm doing my part, too.
They're doing their part. Are you? Join the mobile infantry and save the world. Service guarantees citizenship.
everybody sing. 19 minutes after the hour, this is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's go to the phones. We're joined by our good friend David from Middle Tennessee, somewhere near Nash Vegas. David, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, Bob from Nash Vegas. Lovely day today. And, boy, the weather's great. And your show is just flying around the room. It's just bouncing off the walls.
Swat that thing.
No, I'm loving it. I'm just having a big old time. But a couple of things you just said have put me, I want to dramatize something. I want to try to make a point. Give me a little bit of, you know, give me about 90 seconds.
You got all you want. Bring us the drama.
Petroleum products have been intensely important to the United States of America since December the 7th, 1941.
Right.
And we've never, ever, ever been able to step away from that. So, with that auspicious beginning, and either between fighting wars or driving cars or making things, or, just like in The Graduate, plastics, son, it's plastic. It's either in the ground, in the tank, or in some form of chemical processing. America lives for, by, with, on oil. So nowadays, I think we've forgotten one additional, I don't think it's occurred to us, one additional aspect of this petroleum importance. Always before, I would hear incredible commentators, you, or guys that I felt I could trust on TV. Well, certainly it's about the oil. The initial name for invading Iraq was, what was it, Oil Iraq Liberation, Operation Iraqi Liberation, spelled O-I-L. Hey, America, I got a little newsflash for you. This just in, there is an avalanche coming down the hill. It's the economic change in the balance of power, and it's going, the scales are tilting toward China, primarily, India, secondarily. China's got coal, no oil. India has neither. If America doesn't seize power over petroleum supply, we have no way to become anything but an absolute captured, I almost said a B word that typically I stay away from, captive of China and India. We have no way. What's George Bush going to do? Tell Walmart to, place some orders somewhere else?
Well, but David, the fact of the matter is, the only hope that George Bush had after he raped the Treasury, after he ripped us off, after he gave everybody's hard-earned money to his rich buddies, the only hope he had for balancing out the amount of bad paper that he had to go and hang in China was to take control of the means by which China would receive oil. Now, Iraq is one of the faucets. The other faucet is Iran. If he can control those two things, he can continue to hang bad paper on China, and on the other end act as the dealer outside the schoolyard to China's little junkie.
Cha-ching,
does this make sense?
It makes perfect sense, but I haven't heard it said in that concise a manner. Nobody has made the loop so small that everybody can realize one of the few ways to stop economic domination, and in these days, economic domination means every sort of domination. One of the few short-term things he can do, if not the only short-term thing, is somehow pirate the source of the raw materials that India, and especially China, need, and he and his pals are going to do that. So if anybody thinks we're just fighting to make gas go down 30 cents a gallon, or we want to make plastic products 9% less expensive down at the Dollar General, please get that out of your head.
Well, see, it's so much just abject hooey, David, because if you were listening recently to talk about the high gas prices were apparently driven up based upon speculation. Well, who speculates? I'm not out there speculating in the oil market, David. Neither are you, and neither is anybody else who listens to this program.
There are about five men in very, very high-paid jobs, every nickel of it undeserved, there's a few phone calls went around. Fred, you know, we November's around the corner. What say we do what we got it, John. I understand where we're headed. What's the street date on this? Oh, yeah, we're thinking here.
So we'd like to see a $1.95 by October 25th.
It's not even that. I worked in an industry that fixed prices. What they're going to do is somebody's going to be designated the leader. Among the major distillers of petroleum, the guys that crack crude and turn it into stuff we put in the tank is designated as this guy's leader. I worked in the paper industry. Would it be Weyerhaeuser? Would it be IP? Would it be Owens, Illinois? It didn't matter. Somebody was the lead dog.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, this gas retailer drops at his pumps. Oh, miraculously, every single pump in a major distribution channel drops. Between midnight and 5 o'clock the next morning, it goes down a dime. Well, if he's the designated signal guy, then everybody else moves with him. And then they just keep moving, and they keep moving, and they keep moving. And when suddenly they can see, boy, America's really happy about gas prices, they level off. Just don't plan any trips for Thanksgiving weekend.
Oh, no.
Speculation may take the prices up.
Well, you know, it's that if speculation is able to do that to a national economy, David, then it becomes abundantly clear that the market needs further regulation to take that speculative aspect out of it.
I'll bet you fingers off the hand I write with that those phone calls have been placed, and I know with as small a number of players, what are there now, four energy companies that matter?
Well, yeah, ExxonMobil, Royal Dutch Shell, BP, Citgo.
Citgo to a lesser degree. But
yeah, but,
got,
I mean...
Got Ugo making noises.
Right.
Mi compadre.
But, I mean, yeah, this is the kind of stuff that happens along the Midway. You know, I was reading a favorite old book of mine in which a character goes to work in a carnival, and he is taught to think of the people who come to the carnival not as human beings but as marks or chumps. Okay? It's about time the American people, David, figured out that the oil companies do not think of us as human beings. We are marks. We are chumps because they have proven time and again that they can manipulate the price of fuel to suit their political aims, to suit their stock share price, profit dividends, to suit just about anything they want to. And you know what? We're so darn complacent and stupid that we will take it.
No more, there's no more reason right now, Bob, for gas prices at the pump to be dropping than there were for gas prices to be going up 6 months ago. There is no more reason now for this than there was for that, other than a controlled, manipulated market controlled by four major companies. You've just listed them. You got three. You struggled for the fourth. That one's kind of iffy, and there's nobody else behind them.
No,
I'm sorry. If you've got three people in a market that important, that are that driven toward profit, and they know they're dealing with a resource that will eventually run out.
Well, here, let's take it one paranoid step further, David.
We're not paranoid.
No. Paranoia is the irrational fear that they're out to get you. There's nothing irrational in what we're discussing. But let's take it one step further. Gasoline prices go down, thereby placating the American people. And as long as they stay down, why then we've got a window open to bomb the snot out of little children in Iran. Can you make, I mean, if you sit there and try to get your mind all bushified and eat yourself a handful of Xanax and a couple of swallows of bad vodka, and can you get to that line of reasoning?
I need to put one more step in. The way I think it works is America becomes less irritated. And when they're less irritated, I mean, I'm serious, and I say this with reverence. You know, the soccer mom, Joe Sixpack, guys like me that aren't listening and looking and working at it a little bit, they become less aggravated by gas prices. They become less tormented to the fact that they have to think about visiting a relative they care about 200 miles away. They're not being bedeviled by it. They're less likely to reject these expansionist, imperialist, horrid movements by the Bush administration.
Yeah.
I think we need one more step in there.
Well, and there is one more step, David. The extra step is that the fact of the matter is that the American people, by and large, like the beginnings of wars. It's the middles and the ends that we don't have the stomach for. We like the fireworks show. We're going to like it a whole lot when we see footage from CNN of Bushehr and Natanz and Tehran lighting up in the night with it, because that's all it is to us. It's a big fireworks show, and every day we'll get a daily briefing from some genius general in the military who's probably never heard a shot fired in anger. Who will tell, you know, you remember how they laughed about the guy on the bridge in Iraq in Georgia in George War One? Here's the luckiest man on earth. We almost killed him from 40,000 feet. We like that stuff. It is one of our national character flaws that we do.
And then Toby Keith will have Boot Up Your Butt 2 and make $2 million off a song that I hate to hear. Well, on that note, it's the bottom of the hour, and it's time for you to do other things.
Yeah, we'll go see what the Workers' Independent News Service is up to. David, thank you so much.
I like those guys. Bob, thanks for a great job, and I love the idea of Powers and Morrison digging in a little bit and having a wide view of the earth and saying, wait a second, this horn thing, this is happening. All those guys that listen to that horn, they're on to something. What's pitching it?
I tell you what, we really appreciate their support. They're wonderful people.
Sure, a great site. All right, on to the Workers' News.
Okay, later, David.
Thanks.
Be well. And, it is time to check in with the fine folks at laborradio.org. You can go and check them out anytime you want to. Laborradio.org. This is in their daily features, the Workers' Independent News Service, which is coming up. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
There's a bomb for every city. Now they don't know where to stop. Can they say there's no provisions? It's not enough to go around. When it comes to the gun, there's a bullet for everyone.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. A lockout of newspaper workers at the Toledo Blade continues, with talks expected to resume soon. Doug Cunningham reports.
That a company that they worked for all these years can take such a stand against the people that put them in this place is just, it's unthinkable.
That was Linda Morris Cooley of CWA Printing Sector's Toledo Typographical Local 63. After decades of hard work from union workers at the Toledo Blade, the owners of the newspaper have locked out Linda and more than 200 other union workers. Larry Veliquette is a spokesperson for the Toledo Council of Newspaper Unions.
They gave us a boilerplate rewrite that called for vast givebacks, vast economic givebacks, and also called for the virtual elimination of union rights.
Linda says it was obvious what the Toledo Blade was trying to do.
They were looking to bust the unions.
Talks are scheduled to resume soon. In the meantime, a boycott has reduced the Blade's circulation by an estimated 15% and knocked out 240 advertisers. To support the locked out workers, go to www.stoptheblade.com.
Last week, the United Nations held high-level talks on worldwide migration policies. Excluded from the talks was the voice of migrant workers, so those workers held their own dialogue outside in the street. More than 50 migrant groups gathered on September 14th. Rex Barona of Hong Kong's Asian Migrant Center says workers are seeking recognition for the role they play in the world economy.
Well, we really hope that, you know, the world will recognize that migrant workers are not only victims, they are actually partners in development. And so therefore the UN and the world should recognize their participation and enable them to do their role as partners in social development.
Verona explained how his organization helps migrant workers in Asia.
One of the big things that we have done really is to organize, help organize the migrants. In Asia, we have a lot of migrant trade unions. Domestic workers are unionized, and in fact, they have been attending many of the UN meetings, including CEDAW last August here also in New York, and also in the UN. So we are helping migrants self-represent and then bring themselves and present the issues themselves.
The world's largest retailer is stepping deeper into the realm of politics. Walmart, a corporation that once avoided politics, believing they had little to do with concerns over its business practices, has announced plans to begin a registration and voter education campaign for its 1.3 million workers. According to the congressional newspaper The Hill, Walmart's move will be one of the biggest get-out-the-vote campaigns in the country. The decision comes after a summer of many Democrats stepping up to criticize the big box retailers' labor practices.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Four and a half minutes before the hour. We're halfway through tonight's program. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. You can get the stream. Well, you should know that. Well, if you if you're listening by podcast or archive, you should know that you can get the live stream every evening at headonradionetwork.com as well as at radiopower.org, where we simulcast through the good offices of our good friend Shelby LaPre and Radio Power. And we're also broadcast in delay, this program, at, I believe, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, also at Radio Power. Several chances to catch the program. Yeah, this is new media. If you think about it, well, you know, the technology sort of made it have to be this way. But one of the beauties of new media is that you, as someone who wants to partake of the program, are no longer held in thrall to the scheduling whims of a broadcast executive. You can listen to this program or any other program on the horn any time you want and by virtually any means you wish. Isn't that cool? I love new media. Now if we can just keep the telecoms from destroying it, you know, we'll be doing great. And I have invited, by the way, I have invited a right-wing thinker, you know, one of those free marketeers, to come on the program and talk to me about net neutrality, because they swear up and down the internets will just collapse if we put any kind of regulation on them. They'll just collapse. It won't work no more. They'll break. Because, see, the internet's a series of tubes. It's not a big truck. Let's go back to Dear Leader. Oh, we're so not done with Dear Leader, Agnes. I know he makes you sick, but, you know, it's one of those necessities. The fire it up again, would you, dear?
And made this region a breeding ground for extremism. Imagine what it's like to be a young person living in a country that is not moving toward reform. You're 21 years old, and while your peers in other parts of the world are casting their ballots for the first time, you are powerless to change the course of your government.
Pause it, please. I hate it when he inadvertently talks about the people of the United States and tries to palm it off like he's talking about somebody else. Did you get that? Imagine what it's like to be a young person living in a country that is not moving toward reform. That would be us! Unless we do something big, such as Rand Beers mentioned in the last hour. Unless we put the Congress in the hands of the Democratic Party, and I mean both houses, and minimize the influence of the freaks that have tried to destroy this nation, we're done. Imagine what it's like to be a young person living in a country that's not moving toward reform. You're 21 years old, and while your peers in other parts of the world are casting their ballots for the first time, you're powerless to change the course of your government. That's us! And did you notice, you're 21 years old? I guess Dear Leader hates that constitutional amendment, too, that gave the vote to the 18-year-olds. This is like some sort of twisted idea of a Shakespearean sonnet. You know, how art thou a moron? Let me count the ways. Thou knowest not the voting age. Thou art a doofus. Well, let's go on with it.
While your peers in other parts of the world have received educations that prepare them for the opportunities of a global economy, you have been fed propaganda and conspiracy theories that blame others for your country's shortcomings.
Stop it! Why is that man talking about the United States? You've been fed propaganda and conspiracy theories. Oh, George! Do you mean like the conspiracy theory that said Mohammed Atta had tea and crumpets with Saddam Hussein in Vienna? That one? Or is it the conspiracy theory that said Saddam was trying to get yellow cake uranium from Niger? Was that the one that you fed the people of the United States? Is that the conspiracy you're talking about, you monkey? That blame others for your country's shortcomings. Oh, you mean like Katrina? You mean like Sago? You mean like the highest budget deficit in the history of the nation? You mean those shortcomings? Are those the ones that you're talking about there, Dear Leader? Hit it, Agnes.
And everywhere you turn, you hear extremists who tell you that you can escape your misery.
Okay, I want you to use the rewind function. You know, it'll sound like the chipmunks, but I want to hear him say extremists again. Stop.
The global economy. You have been fed propaganda and conspiracy theories that blame others for your country's shortcomings. And everywhere you turn, you hear extremists who tell you that you can escape your misery and regain your dignity through violence and terror and martyrdom.
Stop. You mean like Jesus Camp, George? Now, there's a link at headonradionetwork.com to an ABC News report on the Jesus Camp film. And you'll see footage from the film of the little children bashing mugs with the word government on them, shattering them into millions of tiny pieces. And you'll see the leader of this creepy little camp in North Dakota, you'll see her say, you know, I admire the parents in Palestine and in the Muslim world who teach their children to be willing to die for their faith. Is that the kind of extremism you're talking about, George? See, there's, again, we had the little psychological conversation with Dr. Rick, cowboy psychologist, last night. And I mean that in a most respectful term. And Dr. Rick was talking about some of the things, the overt manifestations of the sick mind that is George W. Bush. And apparently, I got a note a little bit ago. Who fired all the speechwriters? This one really sucks. And do you hear that? And when there's a pause in between, his, you know, when he's going to a new page of his Etch-a-Sketch, you hear the, and that's a whole bunch of people sitting in the audience going, "This guy's crazy. This guy's nuts. This guy's dangerous. Can somebody carry him off in a net?" Yeah, that. Let's see. Where were we? Escape your misery and regain your dignity through violence and terror and martyrdom. Now, through all of that, you would have thought that he was talking about the United States, but apparently not.
For many across the broader Middle East, this is the dismal choice presented every day.
Okay.
Every civilized nation, including those in the Muslim world, must support those in the region who are offering a more hopeful alternative. We know that when people have a voice in their future, they are less likely to blow themselves up in suicide attacks. We know that when leaders are accountable to their people, they are more likely to seek national greatness in the achievements of their citizens rather than in terror and conquest.
Rava? Rava? Did you hear that? Rava?
So we must stand with democratic leaders and moderate reformers across the broader Middle East.
Some of that up East Yankee Connecticut.
We must give them voice to the hopes of decent men and women who want for their children the same thing we want for ours. We must seek stability through a free and just Middle East, where the extremists are marginalized by millions of citizens in control of their own destinies. Today, I'd like to speak directly to the people across the broader Middle East.
Oh, here comes trouble.
My country desires peace.
My country? Your country, George? Yours? Pause it. Wait a minute. My country? My country desires peace. Is it right? There's something wrong with this man. On the one minute, you've got rather. And then there's my country. My country. Is that some sort of Scottish thing? McCountry? Is that what you buy at McDonald's? McCountry? McCountry desires peace. Extremists in your midst spread propaganda. I'll hit it, Agnes.
Propaganda claiming that the West is engaged in a war against Islam.
Which we are.
This propaganda is false.
No, it isn't.
And its purpose is to confuse you and justify acts of terror.
Are you confused by Tomahawk cruise missiles banging into
Islam.
Family homes? I'm not confused.
But we will protect our people from those who pervert Islam to sow death and destruction. Our goal is to help you build a more tolerant and
now, wait a minute. Wait. Pope Nazi last week said... He quoted a guy from 10 centuries ago, and the Islamic world started hopping up and down. And dear leader just used pervert and Islam right next to each other in the same sentence. They're going to love you in that broader Middle East, George. They're just going to think you're spiffy.
Honors people of all faiths and promotes the peace. To the people of Iraq, nearly 12 million of you braved the car bombers and assassins last December to vote in free elections.
Over 100,000 of you are dead. I killed you.
Purple ink stinked fingers.
Ink stinked? Back up. Wait a minute. Did he just say ink stinked? No. Did he say ink stinked?
Oh, damn.
Oh. You broke it, Agnes. We're going to have to hop through here a minute. Just quickly, put it somewhere.
We will continue to train those of you who step forward to fight the enemies of freedom. We will not yield
up.
The future
I want to see
of
if
your
he
country
said
to terrorists and extremists.
Did he say instinct? No, don't do it there. Use the happy button, yes. I want to see if he said instinct. Okay, that ought to be enough.
America and our coalition partners will continue to stand with the democratic government you elected.
No, never mind. He did. He said
we'll continue to help you secure the international assistance and investment you need to create jobs and opportunity, working with the United Nations and through the international compact with Iraq endorsed here in New York yesterday. We will continue to train those of you who step forward to fight the enemies of freedom.
Wait a minute. He's talking about the Iraqi military. It's like the Iraqi Navy. Everything, you know, everything having to do with the Iraqi Navy starts with, in a stunning underwater ceremony, the Iraqi Army, 40% of it stands up. And I mean, when the Iraqi Army stands up, we'll stand down. Well, every time the Iraqi Army stands up, 40% of it deserts. They're standing up to leave. Yeah, we're having magnificent success in Iraq. I'd hate to see your failure, George. Okay, back to George.
We will not yield the future of your country to terrorists and extremists.
Anymore.
In return, your leaders must rise to the challenges your country is facing and make difficult choices to bring security and prosperity.
Like whether or not Saddam's a dictator. That judge said that got removed today.
Working together, succeed so it can become a beacon of hope for millions in the Muslim world.
Yeah, it's a beacon in the Muslim world. A beacon of hope.
The people of Afghanistan. Together we overthrew the Taliban regime that brought misery into your lives and harbored terrorists who brought death to the citizens of many nations.
That's why your heart's breaking again, because they're coming back, sunshine.
Since then, we have watched you choose your leaders in free elections and build a democratic government. You can be proud of these achievements. We respect your courage and your determination to live in peace and freedom. We will continue to stand with you to defend your democratic gains.
As well as your opium and heroin market.
Today, forces from more than 40 countries, including members of the NATO alliance, are bravely serving side by side with you against the extremists who want to bring down the free government you've established.
Just can't say that word without slurring, can he?
We'll help you defeat these enemies and build a free Afghanistan.
He's like the old drunk at the end of the bar in Bewitched, you know?
It'll be a safe haven for terrorists.
Terrorists.
To the people of Lebanon.
Oh, dear.
Last year, you inspired the world when you came out into the streets to demand your independence from Syrian
dominance.
Hold
on a minute, Agnes. This really takes some chutzpah. Delivering a message from the podium at the United Nations to the people of Lebanon that he rushed bombs and fuel to the Israelis to kill? Wow. I mean, that takes brass that you have to haul around in a wheelbarrow. You gotta admit that. To the people of Lebanon, at least the ones I haven't killed yet, or helped kill. Don't worry, if you stand up on your hind legs again, we will send more bombs to Israel and you will die. Okay? I mean, freedom only goes so far. You are free to do whatever the Israelis tell you to do. Okay? Goody. Now let's move on.
You drove Syrian forces from your country and you reestablished democracy. Since then, you have been tested by the fighting that began with Hezbollah's unprovoked attacks on Israel.
Oh, that's what
it was. Many of you have seen your homes and your communities caught in crossfire.
Some of you have seen your children blown to bits.
The world is helping you to rebuild your country and helping you deal with the armed extremists who are undermining your democracy by acting as a state within a state.
That's the word of the day, isn't it? Extremist.
The United Nations has passed a good resolution that has authorized an international force led by France and Italy to help you restore Lebanese sovereignty over Lebanese soil.
Petty fours and cannoli for everybody.
Lebanon was a model of democracy and pluralism and openness in the region, and it will be again.
As long as the Israelis don't bomb the snot out of you. Yeah, we got that.
The United States respects you. We respect your country.
Okay, wait a minute. I yapped through that one. Back up. Use the little backup thingy. There, that's good.
The United States respects you.
Yeah, this is to the people of Iran.
We respect your country.
We want your oil.
We admire your rich history.
We admire your rich oil fields.
And your many contributions to civilization.
And did we mention your oil?
You deserve an opportunity to determine your own future.
And give us your oil.
An economy that rewards your intelligence and your talents.
By selling us your oil.
and a society that allows you to fulfill your tremendous potential.
Of pumping oil.
The greatest obstacle to this future is that your rulers have chosen to deny you liberty.
And us oil.
And to use your nation's resources to fund terrorism and fuel extremism and pursue nuclear weapons.
Which is a lie.
The United Nations has passed a clear resolution requiring that the
regime in Tehran... I mean, far be it from me to tell Mahmoud Ahmadinejad how to do his business. He's crazy, too. Okay? These are two crazy dudes fighting over taste great and less filling. Okay? Let's just have that done. But I don't know if Mr. Ahmadinejad's command of the English language is sufficient that he can say, I will tell the world in no uncertain terms that we are not pursuing any nuclear weapons. Because you know what? Even if he's trying to build the biggest stinking atomic bomb ever constructed, what he said will be true, because there's no such thing as a nuclear weapon! 5.5 long years, 6 long years if you count the campaign, I have had to listen to this ignorant monkey talk about nuclear this and nuclear that, and I'm about tired of it. Somebody has got to... We pump billions into the White House and we can't get one person to sit down with him for 1 hour and say, George, say what I say. Nuclear. Now, I realize it's a time-consuming thing, but we're talking about the dignity of the nation, and I would say this about a Democratic president who couldn't pronounce the damned language. Okay, on we go.
Meet its international obligations. Iran must abandon its nuclear weapons ambitions. Despite what the regime tells you, we have no objection to Iran's pursuit of a truly peaceful nuclear power program. We're working toward a diplomatic solution to this crisis. And as we do, we look to the day when you can live in freedom. And America and Iran can be good friends and close partners in the cause of peace.
And oil buddies, pause it a minute. See, this is where we get a really bad reputation. This is what makes other people hate our guts. We're working toward a diplomatic solution to this crisis. And as we do, look to the day when you can live in freedom. Who in the hell is George Bush to say that the Iranians don't? I live in a country where I'm not even sure if my vote's going to count in November. Okay? How free are you? You know, there's a significant portion of this country that wants to build a fence to keep the Mexicans out of this country. But you know what? When you build that fence, it's going to keep you in too, sunshine. How free will you be then? How free are the people on the Gulf Coast? How free are the people in the Ninth Ward? How free are the families that still grieve for the bodies dragged out of Aracoma and Sago and mines in Kentucky? How free are the people whose wells have been poisoned by the blasting that comes with mountaintop removal? How free are they? He throws around precious terms with precious little regard for them. How free are we who are saddled with a Congress that doesn't even want to do its job? How free are we that are saddled with a Congress that doesn't even want to exercise the powers granted it under Article 2 of the Constitution? I mean, Article 1 of the Constitution. Huh? How free are we that chose by a wide margin in the year 2000, November 2000, by a wide margin, we chose a man named Al Gore to be the President of the United States? How free are we that we were saddled with this ignorant, hateful little man? How free are we? How free? How free are the gay people in the United States who can't live with and marry those whom they wish to marry because somebody else is concerned with what happens when the lights go out? How free are they? How free are the Sikhs who have been beaten to death by right-wing hate mongers who mistook them for Muslims in the days after 9/11? How free are they? How free? How free is the man who's had his job outsourced to God knows where and lost everything? How free is the man who's come home from Iraq with a traumatic brain injury only to find out that his so-called president has eliminated funding for the investigation of such injuries? How free is he? This is the Head On Radio Network.
Thailand's military took control of the country today on charges that the prime minister was undermining democracy. The army commander, who will act as acting prime minister, declared martial law and suspended the constitution. The prime minister canceled today's scheduled talk before the United Nations General Assembly in New York. In a speech to the assembly this morning, President Bush pushed for the spread of democracy in the Middle East. He also denied the U.S. is waging a war against Islam. President Bush also challenged world leaders to end the violence in Darfur, adding that the UN's credibility is at stake. He appointed a special U.S. convoy to help secure peace in the troubled region of Sudan. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan also addressed the world leaders. He described global disorder, widespread contempt for human rights, and what he called an unjust world economy. In Washington, a top military commander says more U.S. troops may be needed in Iraq to handle the rising insurgency. That's despite earlier statements that indicated some of the troops would return by the end of this year. In Iraq today, 18 people were killed in two bombings in the northern city of Mosul. Four U.S. soldiers have been killed in the last 3 days, including one in a suicide bombing today. Also, an Iraqi TV journalist was killed in Ramadi, and both the Iranian and British consulates in Basra were attacked. Also, dozens more tortured bodies were discovered throughout Baghdad. In Baghdad today, the chief judge in Saddam Hussein's genocide trial was removed and replaced by his deputy. That follows a comment the chief judge made last week that Saddam was not a dictator. In Hungary, despite riots that injured more than 100 people, the prime minister is refusing to resign. The several thousand rioters were angry at his admission that he lied about the country's economy during his recent election campaign. FBI statistics reveal that last year, of the nation's 10 largest cities, New York was the safest. Dallas had the highest crime rate, followed by San Jose and Los Angeles. The governors of Oregon, Washington, and California have joined together in a sort of West Coast alliance to help fight threats to the Pacific Ocean. They say a unified voice will give them more clout in the nation's capital on issues such as offshore oil and gas drilling. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business and science news is next. It's now 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Former Vice President Al Gore has suggested combating global warming by taxing carbon dioxide emissions. The so-called carbon tax would take the place of employees' payroll taxes. The Commerce Department reports that in August, U.S. home building starts fell 6%. Groundbreaking permits also dropped 2.3%. Daimler Chrysler has announced it's cutting its production by 135,000 in the third and fourth quarters. That's because there's a large number of unsold inventory on dealers' lots. Princeton has joined Harvard in ending its early admission program. Both universities say the practice is not fair to low-income students. Hewlett-Packard Chairwoman Patricia Dunn and the company's general counsel have agreed to testify next week before a House panel. Their testimony is part of an investigation into a media leak scandal that could prompt criminal charges. HP says it's providing computers and computer-related products to the U.S. Army as part of a 10-year contract. Ordering is expected to open on October 1st. The White House is distributing anti-drug videos on the popular YouTube Internet site. The public service announcement are produced by the government. Light sweet crude settled today at $61.66. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 14 points at 11,541. NASDAQ down 13 points at 2222. S&P 500 down 3 at 1318. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
5.5 minutes after the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid. You know, thinking about who's free in the United States, wouldn't it be nice to have a free press? Wouldn't it be nice to have a free press, but we don't, you know, because the press is owned, you know, the media, especially the broadcast media, are owned by maybe just slightly fewer corporations than own the energy industry. Stirring, isn't it? And you wonder why, you know. I'm proud that you take your time to listen to this program and find out a little, you know, a different perspective, a different thought, because you're not going to hear anybody with the, I mean, I'll be honest, and it's not just me. You're not going to hear anybody on the mainstream media, with the possible exception of Keith Olbermann and Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert, those two with their tongues implanted firmly in their cheeks, who have the guts to say what you're going to hear right here on America's liberal voice, the Head On Radio Network. And I mean that from the top to the bottom. I mean Dr. Bill O'Brien. I mean Mark Levine. I mean Guy James. I mean Bruce Birch, and I mean me. Okay? And a little programming note for you. First of all, I don't think he'd mind me saying this, Guy James informed me toward the end of the program last night. I didn't have a chance to announce it. Guy has had a death in his family. One of his dearest uncles has passed away, so he is gone all week long. And out of the goodness of his heart, Mark Levine has decided to try a little experiment. So tomorrow, as usual, we will begin live with Mark at 2 p.m. and then carry over into Guy's slot with Mark sitting in for Guy James. I hope you'll be around. Mark really wants to talk to some of you guys that he's not spoken to before. Please take time to listen, introduce yourself, acquaint yourself with Mark Levine's program, because there's not a bad minute of radio on this network. And part of what makes me proud and part of what makes me know that we're doing the right thing is that everybody on this network has worked for a living and knows what it means to do so. And I think that's what gives us special credibility. That's what makes us real. So check out our good friend Mark Levine sitting in for Dr. Bill tomorrow afternoon. Starting at 2 p.m., his own slot, and then from 3 to 5 in Guy James's. And if you're the praying type, or the chanting type, or the meditating type, or the sending positive energy type, whatever it is you do, send some of it Guy's way, please. Let's go to the phones. We're joined by a new friend, George, from Denver. George, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Good. Hey, I've been studying the Bush crime family for about 30 years now,
mm-hmm.
and I've always felt that George H. Bush had a hand in JFK being murdered.
Well, you know, there are those who tend to think that way, too, because, after all, wasn't he contacted immediately after the shooting or prior to? Wasn't there some proximate contact between the CIA and George Bush along about the time of the assassination?
Well, I believe that George Bush was actually in the CIA, and I believe it was the CIA and the really rich oil companies in Texas, and they used the hitmen of three mafia crime families to do the hit. But if you Google George H. Bush in the school book depository, what you'll see is a picture of George Bush standing next to the steps of the book depository with cops and detectives running up and down, and there's that idiot standing there.
Really?
Right in the middle of the crime scene. And you know what? It says that he's the only one that didn't know where he was that day. And you know, when you look this up and you see this picture, it's a dead ringer. I mean, it's him. There's absolutely no question.
Well, there is just so much creepiness surrounding that family, George. You know, if you go back to Prescott Bush, and you go back to him robbing the grave of Geronimo at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and taking it back to the shrine at Skull and Bones at Yale, and then you move forward in time, and there's Prescott getting busted under the Trading with the Enemy Act for his helping Nazi financier Fritz Thyssen. It's all there. It's all documented. It's in the Federal Register, among other things.
You know, another thing, if you Google LBJ and a congressman named Albert Thomas, do you remember the picture of LBJ holding up his hand, taking the oath with Jackie next to him with guts all over?
Yeah.
And it's the saddest picture you ever saw. We've all seen it a million times. Well, the picture that happened 15 seconds later is Johnson turning towards Albert Thomas and Thomas giving him a smile and a wink. And you know what? I believe right then is when our government changed hands.
Well, there's no doubt that that is the day that our national will got its heart broken, George.
Yeah.
And this, Mike Malloy, I think, coined the Bush crime family as a phrase all his own, and it got adopted across this nation. And the fact is they are, because very few people know, remember, have been informed of. Do you happen to know who it was that John Hinckley's family was dining with the day that he shot Reagan?
Yes, I do.
Would you care to share it with our friends?
Was it Neil Bush? Yeah, Neil Bush, wasn't it?
No, it was the Bush family. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they were going to have dinner that night all together.
Yeah.
But they had to cancel because his brother almost made Neil's dad president that night. But there's another thing I'd like people to Google, and
okay,
that is Oswald on the school book depository doorway. Because what I found is when he was captured, they asked him, they said, well, where were you when Kennedy got murdered? And he said, I was standing in the doorway. Well, they have pictures where you see the motorcade. You see Kennedy holding his throat, and you see a guy standing in the doorway. And when they zoom in, it's a guy with a plaid shirt on, buttoned down to his midsection, with a white T-shirt under it. And like I said, they zoom in. And then they show the picture of him when he's caught. They're wearing the exact same thing. Oswald was right where he said he was. He was in the doorway. He had really nothing to do with that.
Well, you know, John Kennedy's sister died yesterday, Peter Lawford's wife.
Oh.
And I couldn't help reflecting, George, at what a sea change we've gone through. Now, granted, you won't catch me being an apologist for old man Joe Kennedy. He was an anti-Semite. He was an appeaser of Hitler. Nasty, nasty man. But he raised children somehow who didn't turn out like he did. He raised people who actually wanted to serve the American people and wanted to make this a better place. Whether it's John or Bobby or Teddy, the various sisters have done everything in their power to make things better. And that family contrasted with the manifest evils of the Bush family. It reminds me of that bumper sticker that's floating around the nation lately that says, Frodo failed. W has the ring. The Bush family has never earned an honest dollar in its entire life, It has never done anything but suck off the federal teat and taxpayer dollars. They are the most hateful, nasty welfare monsters that this country has ever produced. And yet there are people in this country who will still say, well, you know, they're upright people. You know, we're talking about Barbara Bush and George H.W., who went to play golf the day that they buried their four-year-old daughter who died from leukemia, who palmed off little George W. to whatever babysitter they could find, who will practically come to blows over a croquet match. I mean, this family, George, is a picture of American domestic dysfunction.
Well, I believe they're probably the most evilest family that have ever walked this earth. And I'm worried about, like, the elections coming. I don't think we're going to do anything because they own everything. They own the voting machines. They own the media. They own everything. And what they do is they play a little game. They let us make it look like we have a chance. And then when we get right there, well, then their polls. Oh, no, it's like neck and neck. Oh, you just barely lost.
Oh, darn the luck.
And it always happens that way, and I'm afraid it's about to happen again.
I saw another voting machine story come out today, George, that just made little chills, you know, and they all make little chills run down my spine. It turns out that on Diebold's AccuVote monstrosities, you can get into the security door where the memory card is held. You can get into that with the key to an honor bar in a hotel room.
I read that. That's funny.
Oh, you know,
it's sad.
The Princeton team that did the video last week, have you seen the video yet? It's amazing. The Princeton team said that they had people who could get into the voting machines in less than 10 seconds. So imagine if somebody is professionally trained to do all of this. And it only takes one machine getting the virus, and then the whole precinct gets it.
But I believe from Kennedy's assassination, even way before that, but mainly his assassination, and you look at all the crap that's happened ever since, it's all because this shadow government runs the show, and they do everything. I believe George H. Bush was president for 12 years, really.
Oh, I have no doubt of that.
I mean, he ran the whole... He was getting tired of being president. And his son... He promised his son he could be president. You know,
well, and it's not just that. That's where the really weird psychology kicks in, like our good friend Dr. Rick mentioned last night, George. There's a level of Oedipal stuff going on in the Bush family that is simply not to be believed without, you know, a complete psychiatric diagnosis. George had to be president because he's been in a constant competition with his daddy ever since he got out of diapers. You know, daddy was an airplane pilot. He had to be an airplane pilot. Daddy had an oil company. He had to have an oil company. The parallels are stunning and frightening. And what Dr. Rick said last night that I think is very, very, very true is that George is so close to coming unglued now that, if somebody stood up with a poster board sign in the background that said, "You're not as good as your daddy," he might very well just melt down on the spot.
I heard you guys talking last night on that.
Yeah. It's, there are psychological dynamics that go on with this family and their participation in that shadow government. You're absolutely right, because it goes back to the First World War when some Walker or some Bush or some combination of the two got onto the wartime materiels board. And, man, that's when they got on that federal teat, and they have never let go of it to this day.
When we went into Vietnam over a lie, the Gulf of Tonkin was all lies. I saw the commander on that ship that was supposedly attacked, and he said, "It's not now a lie. We were never, ever attacked." And that's what they ramped up the Vietnam War for. And you know who went in and built those bases in Vietnam? What company?
That was Kellogg, Brown, and Root, wasn't it?
That's right.
Because back then they were known as Kellogg, Brown, and Root. And their most notorious contribution to the Vietnamese war effort were the so-called tiger cages in which captives were kept.
Yeah, right. And that wink and smile that Albert Thomas gave Johnson, Albert Thomas, he got, I think it was a contract to Brown and Root to build the Houston Space Center, you know.
Yeah.
And unbelievable if you go back and look at these criminals. And I just hope everybody learns. These are the people that killed, you know, Tom Hartman plays John Kennedy a lot, and some great stuff, just some beautiful stuff. And yeah. I listened to it. I just want to cry because you had this beautiful person that was going to change the world to be this great place, and then these criminals like Bush come along and just blew his head off right in front of us. But I wanted to get the word out that people should Google these things and take a look.
Yeah. We've got to take a look because it's not going to be put out there for public consumption. If some turns out to be true, if some turns out to be false, you know, the very nature of legitimate journalism is the sorting of those two factors from each other. It's separating the wheat from the chaff. And nobody in mainstream journalism is making that effort. None whatsoever.
None.
Our fourth estate has ceased to be any sort of a viable force for truth, goodness, or decency in this country, George.
I totally agree.
Well, I thank you very kindly. I hope we'll hear from you again soon.
Okay, well, it was nice talking to you, Bob.
You take care now.
Okay, you too.
Bye now.
Bye.
And rolling onward, our good friend Sarge is with us. Hey, Sarge, how's life in southern Mississippi?
Oh, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, I know. I shouldn't have asked, but
that was a great caller. That guy was really good. I enjoyed his call.
I am blessed, Sarge, with the best callers that anybody could ever hope to have in this business.
Well, I saw Bruce put on there in the chat room to tell him he was a great caller. Hope he called back in sometime.
I hope he will too.
I want to tell you about something. You know, Bush wants to talk about your country and all of that as if we're in some kind of third person. But at least he's saying, country down here, we're just this part of the world.
That's true. You are a part of the world down there. I've heard that.
You know, I mean, this sorry, low-down, filthy, stinking super chicken junior just doesn't think anybody but his little gang of thugs are all that matters in this world. And I am so sick of him. I swear I am. In fact, I'll tell you how sick I am of him. This man and this governor up here in Jackson, Mississippi, have gone to the trouble of making plans to put the Mississippi coast as a mini Las Vegas, as a resort area,
right?
Fancy houses. Now, what they're doing, they are setting it up to where if the poor people, especially the black people, do not leave the coastal area, they will starve them to death. They will kill them off with the mold, the mildew, the formaldehyde, and all the other chemicals. And it is being done deliberately. It is not accidental.
Sure it is.
It is deliberate, and I've got the proof of it.
Well, Sarge, it's ethnic cleansing along the Gulf Coast. I mean, look it. If they could figure out a way, the level of the earth. I mean, we're talking about massive earth moving efforts. If they felt like they could build casinos on it or McMansions or something, the earth level of the Ninth Ward would be raised up immediately, and the levees would be 50 feet high.
Yeah, they just want nothing more than to imprison a group and make them slaves. Of course, they can't just have plantations anymore, so their idea is we'll put them in such desperate shape that they're going to have to break some minor law or a major law. We'll put them in jail. We'll put them to work for us in our casinos. We don't have to pay them anything. We just wait it out until they get so desperate that they break the law. That is the plan on the Mississippi Gulf Coast and New Orleans. I have seen it. That's the plan. Now, that is fact. And Haley Barbour is in it knee deep, you know, to his neck, because he is working along with this federal anarchy government, and they have these things already set in place, and anybody that tells the story gets blackballed.
Well,
that's what's going on.
That's how it operates in Bushmerica, Sarge.
Yeah.
And anybody who's going to go up against it has to understand the dirty nature in which they fight.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, I know they do this stuff, but God Almighty, you know, they actually put this in writing. Can you believe that? They actually put it in writing.
Oh, I don't doubt it. You know, look at, you know, Greg Palast got arrested for taking a picture of a FEMA concentration camp.
Oh, well, what about our guy, Real Drag? I mean,
yeah,
he took pictures at Count Democracy, and next thing he knows, he's picked up for 48 hours, two cameras taken.
Computer wiped out. Destroyed. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, good God almighty. And then there's Josh Wolf.
Josh Wolf out there who wasn't a journalist, but now he is for contempt purposes.
And there's a story I'm working on in Michigan where this girl was protesting, and she was picked up for making films. And there's a good chance that she's going to have to spend time in jail because of it. A film that anybody could take. It has no security value whatsoever, but it's just embarrassing to this bunch of criminal thugs. And George Super Chicken Jr. needs to be in peace. He needs to be done today.
Well, see, that was the thing that scared me out of what Rand Beers said. He said, you know, we got to take the Congress back. But underneath the idea that if we don't take the Congress back, Sarge, we've got 2 years of unmitigated hell and damnation to live through with this little monster.
We can't make it 2 years. I'm sorry, I don't see it happening. Do you?
The sun will be coming up 2 years from now. But Sarge, I don't know what the sun will be coming up on.
I look at these Christian zealots, and I just don't think that there is enough to stop this group because they're changing the laws. They've got the voting machines all rigged up. If you vote the wrong way, they can pick you up. I mean, it's just unbelievable how far this country has sunk. And, you know, how in the world do you stop it when so much momentum has gone the other way? I mean, talking to Mr. Yoakum, who I wrote about in my column for today, he was an SS officer and under Hitler, and I talked to him a lot when I was in Germany, and he told me some of the stories that I thought, wow, that could never happen in America, and I'm watching it happen as we speak. And this thug, Bush and Cheney and all of these rats, they're the ones doing it, and the American people are saying, well, I don't have the time to pay attention because I have to work 14, 16 hours a day just to keep afloat. Well, what they're keeping afloat of in a lot of cases is they're paying for some fancy car, for some fancy pet pooper scooper or whatever, you know, and they can drop that stuff and put that time that they would have to work on that to watching the political climate. You don't have to go but on Powers and Morrison for 30 minutes, and you can be so well informed you won't.
You're darn right you can. Yeah, you don't. I mean, you don't need TV news if Powers and Morrison's out there. You don't need it. Nancy Grace is in hot water now because somebody committed suicide after one of her hateful little interviews. If they pulled that woman off the air, it wouldn't be too soon for me. CNN's running that god-awful Glenn Beck. Who in heaven's name thinks that passes for journalism?
Well, I'd take Mike Malloy over Glenn Beck any day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Yeah, sure.
Because, Malloy, you may not like what you hear.
Oh, I do.
But he's going to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Well, you know, not every... I grew up with a kid, Sarge. He and I were literally roommates in the nursery there at the hospital in Alabama where I was born. We were and we've been friends since then. 2 days apart we were born. And he hated vegetables. And I know this sounds like I've just gone off on a hell of a tangent. But he hated vegetables, so as he was growing up, his mother would hide the broccoli behind a big dollop of chocolate pudding on the spoon, just to get some vegetables into her boy. I don't like my world that way. You know, I like my liquor straight and my news too.
You can do that with spinach with me, and I guarantee you I'll still find that spinach aborted like a plague.
Right, and that's the thing. If it's ugly, you might as well deal with it and get it passed. You know, this is not a good time in America, Sarge. This is not the brass bands and parades and on a summer day, America that we were promised.
Well, I'm worried about DLC because they are nothing more than the left wing of
the GOP. They got busted today. You know that, right?
No, I missed it.
The IRS yanked their 501c3 designation.
Oh, that's great.
Well, it is and it isn't, because you know what? The IRS didn't yank any Republican organization's designation. I don't like how the DLC operates. I don't like the idea that we're going to be that the Democratic Party has to become Republican light in order to succeed. All we have to do is get a real message out. That's the way I feel. I don't like the vision of the Democratic Party that Rahm Emanuel has. I simply do not like it. And frankly, he's setting us up for a fall because he makes us look like we're just the out of power version of the Republican Party. We're talking about returning real honesty, real integrity to the Congress of the United States, and he's out there sleazing around with the same people that Tom DeLay ran with, okay?
Amen. You keep preaching it, brother. You got it right.
I don't need that. But by the same token, again, the Republicans are pulling out all the stops because some DLC people are mounting real challenges to congressional Republicans. So, again, our ongoing theme that it's only going to get uglier, it's only going to get nastier, became a little bit more true today when the IRS yanked the 501c3 charitable organization designation of the DLC.
Well, I don't know what it's going to take to straighten our people out, because certainly the news media is not going to do it. The only thing I see that's going to do it is the Internet. I mean, That's all I see. I have quit listening to TV news. I've quit reading most newspapers. Just online, I'll look and see what the topics is. But I've gotten real particular about what I read anymore, because if I want to hear right wing propaganda, all I got to do is open my front door. You know, because I've got it all over this place.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna let you go, man. And hey, thanks a lot. And remember, we gotta have a free press if we're going to get the word out.
You're absolutely right, Sarge. Thank you so much. Everybody go and have a look at Sarge's latest column at powersandmorrison.com. All right, we're at half past the hour. We're 30 minutes away from the end of tonight's program. I've got a story here that I wanted to make sure that I get to, because this has real, this is real. It's from the McClatchy newspaper chain. It's from this past Friday. Headline, illegal immigrants frequently denied compensation. For these people, you know, there are a lot of people who see the woman who scrubs toilets for $2 an hour as a threat to America's vitality. I can't see it. But at least let's understand who we're talking about here. Jose Hernandez was good with a machete. So he was the top choice when his boss needed someone to chop down young trees that were choking parts of Florida's Everglades. On one trip to the swamps, the workers flew in by helicopter and quickly cut a stand of sprouting trees. But when they took off again, something went wrong. The chopper lurched left and plunged into murky water. A broken rotor blade slashed through Hernandez's left thigh. Doctors saved his life, but they could not save his leg. To pay for his costly medical care, Hernandez filed a workers' compensation claim, which covered some of his bills. Wait for it, it only gets better. Then the insurance carrier, Florida Citrus Business and Industries Fund, discovered that Hernandez was in America illegally without papers or permission from federal immigration officials. It halted all payments and left Hernandez to languish in a low-income Florida nursing home, unable to work to support his wife and four children in Mexico. What do you want to do? What do people want to do to Jose Hernandez? Do you just say, well, too bad for him. It wouldn't have happened if he hadn't come to America. Sooner or later, we have got to understand that there are only two groups in this country. It's not Mexicans and Guatemalans and Hondurans and Americans and Irish Americans and Italian Americans and African Americans and Scottish Americans and this kind of American and that kind of American. There are two kinds of people on planet Earth. There are people who work and people who do not. Jose Hernandez worked until his leg got cut off. And now he's done. Jerry Rosenthal is a lawyer in Florida. He says it's a violation of the American spirit. Employers are hiring these people and pushing them hard to make a profit for the company, but when a worker gets hurt, they abandon him. Good God, they die on the job and get abandoned. Now, I want to remind people, because there was, you know, yesterday it became abundantly clear that Congress had no intention of doing anything about the immigration situation in the United States. It became abundantly clear that the only reason the whole thing was ginned up by the Republican House was to try to split Democrats, liberals, and progressives. And they showed profound, profound prescience in using that issue to do so. Dig it. Get comfortable with it. There are only two groups on this planet, those who work for a living, those for whom someone else signs a paycheck, and those who draw no paycheck because they have the money in the first place. The Bushes are a good example of that. They don't work. There's never been a working Bush in four generations. Okay? They're no good. Then there are the people around them that work. There is a working class and a non-working class. If someone signs your paycheck, you are part of the working class, and whether you like it or not, you are a part of the same class as Jose Hernandez. And what they can refuse to pay Jose Hernandez, they can refuse to pay to you. I know plenty of people here in the state of West Virginia who have spent a lifetime in coal mines and have busted backs and can't work anymore. Not won't work, not don't want to work, can't work anymore. And the workers' compensation in this state has screwed them, blued them, and tattooed them. And their name wasn't Jose Hernandez. Names like Smith, Wilson, Jones. But they got screwed just like Jose Hernandez, because they were workers. And the sooner we figure out that all this immigration hooey has been ginned up solely for the purpose of trying to break the will and the spirit of the progressive left, the sooner we will win this fight. You want to shore up Social Security? Why don't you add 11 million names to the Social Security rolls and watch the trust fund build again? Never thought of it that way, did you? Okay, I'll tell you, now I want to do something right now. No? Okay. What I want to do... Our good friend Susan in Oregon was kind enough to send me the MP3 of Ann Richards' speech to the 1988 Democratic National Convention, the keynote address. We're going to play some portion. It's 37 minutes long. I can't play it all. But I want you to hear what a fighting Democrat sounds like. And it saddens me, frankly, that whenever I play, with a few notable exceptions, Rocky Anderson being one of them, so often when we play the voices of fighting Democrats, they're all dead! But that doesn't mean that it's always going to be that way. One of you, one of the people that my voice reaches, might become the next fighting Democrat. The next person who stands up for honesty, integrity, decency, and real compassion for the people who work every day and trade the minutes and hours of their very lives, minutes and hours that they will never, ever get back, for the money that it takes to feed the people that they love and care for and provide for. I don't know where my voice goes, but I try always to remember that someone is out there who is ready to pick up the torch. The extended family of John F. Kennedy is dying off, as we found out yesterday. And our condolences go out to folks like Ted Kennedy. He buried his sister yesterday. But because that generation dies away does not mean that another generation will not rise up. And it is in the words of those who have gone before that we find the inspiration to go on. What will happen to this country in 2 years if we don't take back the Congress? I cannot tell you. The sun will come up, like I said talking to Sarge. The sun will come up. It's just that I don't know what the nation will look like that it rises on. But as long as there is hope that an Ann Richards will rise up out there, that another John Kennedy is somewhere in the offing, that another Bobby Kennedy is out there, that somewhere in one of the so-called ethnic communities, that there's another Martin out there. Did you ever stop to think that the next Martin Luther King might rise up and be from that community that are frequently called illegals? It's rather a stunning thought, isn't it? But let's go now and hear some words. And we're going to jump around through the speech because, like I said, it's 37 minutes long. I don't have time to play the whole thing. But let's hear some words tonight of a great, great Texan, and moreover, a great, great American, Ann Richards.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Buenas noches, mis amigos. I'm delighted to be here with you this evening because after listening to George Bush all these years, I figured you needed to know what a real Texas accent sounds like. Barbara Jordan, another Texas woman, Barbara made the keynote address to this convention, and two women in 160 years is about par for the course. But if you give us a chance, we can perform. After all, Ginger Rogers did everything that Fred Astaire did. She just did it backwards and in high heels. To announce to this nation that in a little more than 100 days, the Reagan, Meese, Deaver, Knopfziger, Poindexter, North, Weinberger, Watt, Gorsuch, Lavelle, Stockman, Haig, Bork, Noriega, George, Bush will be over. feel a little like I did when I played basketball in the eighth grade. I thought I looked real cute in my uniform. And then I heard a boy yell from the bleachers, "Make that basket, bird legs." And my greatest fear is that same guy is somewhere out there in the audience tonight, and he's going to cut me down to size. Because where I grew up, there really wasn't much tolerance for self-importance, people who put on airs. I was born during the Depression in a little community just outside Waco, and I grew up listening to Franklin Roosevelt on the radio. Well, it was back then that I came to understand the small truths and the hardships that bind neighbors together. Those were real people with real problems, and they had real dreams about getting out of the Depression. I can remember summer nights when we had put down what we called a Baptist pallet, and we listened to the grown-ups talk. I can still hear the sound of the dominoes clicking on the marble slab my daddy had found for a tabletop. I can still hear the laughter of the men telling jokes you weren't supposed to hear, talking about how big that old buck deer was, laughing about Mama putting Clorox in the well when the frog fell in. They talked about war and Washington and what this country needed. They talked straight talk. And it came from people who were living their lives as best they could. And that's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to tell how the cow ate the cabbage. I got a letter last week from a young mother in Lorena, Texas, and I want to read part of it to you. She writes, "Our worries go from payday to payday, just like millions of others. And we have two fairly decent incomes, but I worry how I'm going to pay the rising car insurance and food. I pray my kids don't have a growth spurt from August to December so I don't have to buy new jeans. We buy clothes at the budget stores and we have them fray and fade and stretch in the first wash. We ponder and try to figure out how we're going to pay for college and braces and tennis shoes. We don't take vacations, and we don't go out to eat. Please don't think me ungrateful. We have jobs and a nice place to live, and we're healthy. We're the people you see every day in the grocery stores. We obey the laws. We pay our taxes. We fly our flags on holidays. And we plod along trying to make it better for ourselves and our children and our parents. We aren't vocal anymore. I think maybe we're too tired. I believe that people like us are forgotten in America." Well, of course you believe you're forgotten, because you have been. This Republican administration treats us as if we were pieces of a puzzle that can't fit together. They've tried to put us into compartments and separate us from each other. Their political theory is divide and conquer. They've suggested time and time again that what is of interest to one group of Americans is not of interest to anyone else. We've been isolated. We've been lumped into that sad phraseology called special interests. They've told farmers that they were selfish that they would drive up food prices if they asked the government to intervene on behalf of the family farm. And we watched farms go on the auction block while we bought food from foreign countries. Well, that's wrong. They told working mothers it's all their fault that families are falling apart because they had to go to work to keep their kids in jeans and tennis shoes in college, and they're wrong.
Now, we're going to move forward in the speech. You all know that this is the speech where she made the wonderful remark, poor George, he can't help it. He was born with a silver foot in his mouth. And I will always remember that. But there is so much more to this speech. We're going to move to another portion of it because there is a certain element of Sherman set the Wayback Machine to this speech. Everything that she just described, we made a little bit better under the 8 years that Bill Clinton was in office. I don't want to hear from the Clinton haters. Things did get, you know, the poor got a little bit richer under Bill Clinton's 8 years. It's just a fact. But every step forward we ever take, we take two steps backward when a Republican gets in the White House. This was the speech before the nomination of Michael Dukakis. This was the speech before Michael Dukakis decided to go riding around in a tank. This is the speech before Michael Dukakis looked at Bernie Shaw and said, well, I don't, in response to, wouldn't you advocate the death penalty if somebody raped your wife? This is the speech that went down before Lee Atwater reinvented filthy Republican politics and taught it to young acolytes like Karl Rove. This was that defining moment in history. But now I want you to hear something. I want you to hear this segment of the speech and see if a damn thing has changed. Agnes?
Well, no wonder. No wonder we can't figure it out. Because the leadership of this nation is telling us one thing on TV and doing something entirely different. They tell us that they're fighting a war against terrorists. And then we find out that the White House is selling arms to the Ayatollah. They tell us that they're fighting a war on drugs. And then people come on TV and testify that the CIA and the DEA and the FBI knew they were flying drugs into America all along.
Afghan heroin, anyone?
And they're negotiating with a dictator who is shoveling cocaine into this country like crazy. I guess that's their Central American strategy.
Afghan heroin, anyone?
Now, they tell us that employment rates are great and that they're for equal opportunity. But we know it takes two paychecks to make ends meet today when it used to take one.
Now it takes four.
And the opportunity they're so proud of is low-wage, dead-end jobs. And there is no major city in America where you cannot see homeless men sitting in parking lots holding signs that say, I will work for food. Now, my friends, we really are at a crucial point in American history. Under this administration, we have devoted our resources into making this country a military colossus. But we've let our economic lines of defense fall into disrepair.
Is this 1988 or 2006? Or 1928?
The debt of this nation is greater than it has ever been in our history. We fought a world war on less debt than the Republicans have built up in the last 8 years.
Or five.
You know, it's kind of like that brother-in-law who drives a flashy new car, but he's always borrowing money from you to make the payments. Well, but let's take what they're proudest of. That is their stand on defense. We Democrats are committed to a strong America, and quite frankly, when our leaders say to us, we need a new weapons system, our inclination is to say, well, they must be right. But when we pay billions for planes that won't fly, billions for tanks that won't fire, and billions for systems that won't work, that old dog won't hunt. And you don't have to be from Waco to know that when the Pentagon makes crooks rich and doesn't make America strong, that it's a bum deal.
Coalition Provisional Authority, anyone? Same crap, different
Bush.
Now, I'm
going to tell you, I'm really glad that our young people missed the Depression and missed the Great Big War. But I do regret that they missed the leaders that I knew. Leaders who told us when things were tough and that we'd have to sacrifice and that these difficulties might last for a while. They didn't tell us things were hard for us because we were different or isolated or special interests. They brought us together and they gave us a sense of national purpose. They gave us Social Security, and they told us they were setting up a system where we could pay our own money in, and when the time came for our retirement, we could take the money out.
And they want to tear that
down,
too.
People in the rural areas were told that we deserved to have electric lights, and they were going to harness the energy that was necessary to give us electricity so my grandmama didn't have to carry that old coal oil lamp around. And they told us that they were going to guarantee when we put our money in the bank that the money was going to be there and it was going to be insured. They did not lie to us.
We'll stop there. They did not lie to us. They did not lie to us. Ann Richards, requiescat in pace. The show tonight was produced by my darling, talented, lovely wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. John Fox in Sydney, Australia, is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams and the archives of all the Horn programming. A good bit of the Horn programming is simulcast by our good friend Shelby LePre at RadioPower.org. Peter Godbold is the IT professional for the Head On Radio Network. Gene is the news editor for the news blog at headonradionetwork.com. All the programs on the Horn happen because there are several thousand dedicated members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights, and they get up every day and they go and they build the American dream, and by supporting this network, they're trying to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR. It's all for you.
Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, featuring the best of Mike Malloy.
True Seekers, Malloy here on Resistance Radio. Thank you very much for joining us. Program produced by Catherine Bay. Robin Bittman announces for us. The phone number here is 800-TALK-YES. That's 800-825-5937. Or if you'd like to email during the program, MikeDMalloy@earthlink.net. We have a bulletin for you here. Mr. Bush revealed today how he plans to allocate the money in Social Security's unlocked box that's not already being used to pay for his tax cut for the wealthy. The remaining Social Security funds in there will be used to build a multi-billion dollar national demon defense shield. Now, this will protect Americans from the threat of foreign-launched incoming evil spirits. You haven't heard about this? Mr. Bush's decision to back this controversial project came in response to the heartfelt Christian concern expressed by General Dynamics Government Contracting Division.